A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host as we explore the changes at work in the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues that are challenging these arts organizations. Today, we'll touch base with the Philadelphia Ballet, the new name recently assumed by the Pennsylvania Ballet, to demonstrate a more direct connection to its hometown. Its dancers will be returning to live performances this fall following the shutdown, and I'll speak with Artistic Director Angel Correa and Music Director Beatrice Afron about the name change and their future plans as the ballet company moves forward. Let's start off with a look at some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. Concertgoers may need to tuck their vaccination cards next to their tickets when they head back to performances this fall. Carnegie Hall is one of the venues that have announced that audiences will have to show proof that they are fully vaccinated in order to attend in-person performances. Other venues, including the New Jersey Performing Arts Center, are requiring either proof of vaccination or a negative COVID test taken within 3 days of an event. Other venues are awaiting updated guidance before making their decisions in advance of reopening. Despite efforts to move past the pandemic, the continuing risk of COVID-19 remains a real obstacle for the performing arts as they try to reopen. The Verbier Festival in Switzerland had to send its orchestra musicians home and reprogram its season, which opened this Friday, after some musicians tested positive for the virus. In a statement on July 12th, the festival said it was replacing the Verbier Festival Orchestra with a chamber orchestra for its opening concerts after several musicians tested positive. 2 days later, it canceled all its planned festival orchestra concerts and announced it would reprogram its opera productions, which were supposed to feature performances of La Fanciulla dell'Oeste and the second act of Tristan and Isolde. Down under, as Australia faces a resurgence of the virus, Opera Australia has had to cancel the rest of its season. The Sydney Opera House, where it makes its home, has announced it will remain closed through July 31st. The Greater Princeton Youth Orchestra and Westminster Conservatory of Music are partnering up in an effort to expand performance opportunities for young musicians. In a statement, the Youth Orchestra announced the partnership through which it will become the orchestra for students enrolled in the conservatory, which is the community music school of Westminster College of the Arts at Rider University. Through the partnership, orchestra members will be able to receive discounted tuition on classes and will be eligible for conservatory financial aid and scholarships. In addition, the orchestra announced that it appointed Jessica Morell as its new music director. Morell was primary conductor for the Charlotte Symphony Youth Philharmonic and was also previously music director of the Winston-Salem Symphony Youth Orchestra. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the world of the performing arts. As its dancers prepare to return to live performances this fall, the Pennsylvania Ballet will introduce itself as the Philadelphia Ballet, a name change that reflects both the original plans of the company's founder and also an ability to connect more directly with the city. During the pandemic, the company created several productions that were recorded and shared digitally, so the ballet is looking to start its new season with a limited program in October at its performance garage for a small audience. Its full season ramps up in December with its annual Balanchine Nutcracker run December 10th through 31st at the Academy of Music, and the spring will bring another four productions, including Swan Lake, an all-Balanchine program, and some new works. I reached out to Artistic Director Angel Correa and Music Director Beatrice Afron to talk about the name change, life during the pandemic, and some of the ways the company is looking ahead to its future. Correa said the decision followed much discussion about the ballet and its connections to the city.
We have been working on it and thinking about it and doing research about how people see us and how we see ourselves with our patrons, our audiences, and our city. And I think this year sort of gave us the moment to pause and to really analyze what our role in our community and our city and our community and our dance and our dance community and our art community, what we represent. And the more and more we fall into it, and Beatrice can corroborate the fact that everyone recognizes us, of course, as Pennsylvania Ballet, but mainly because we're in Philadelphia, and a lot of people, they see us as Philadelphia Ballet. And there has been thousands of times that we had to correct people that, you know, I'm the artistic director of Pennsylvania Ballet, not Philadelphia Ballet. And Beatrice, I'm sure that she had the same problem with the Philadelphia Ballet Orchestra, Pennsylvania Ballet Orchestra. So we got to a time that we decided to start taking the steps to go in that direction. And when we start taking those steps, then our founder and our mother, Barbara Weisberger, passed away. And then the pandemic, it was happening. So it felt like it was the perfect time for us to come back into the Academy of Music, come back and like in a phoenix and sort of like not from the ashes, because we actually were very lucky to have an amazing team with Shelley Power, with our executive director, that keep us quite strong during the pandemic, and we finish our year without a deficit, which is, you know, a miracle. But to come out of this with a new face, with a new energy, and with a new look. And that does not mean that we are thinking of erasing the past. The past is taking us where we are today. And thanks to that, we are where we are today. But we want to look into the future, and we wanted to see what, you know, how we're recognized in our city and around the world. And I think that the name of Philadelphia Ballet, it's what it really stood up as, you know, this is what our future should be.
I would just add to that, that Barbara's original intention was for the company to be called Philadelphia Ballet. And at the time, there was a competing company that actually didn't last very long, but that had a very similar name. And so it was not possible. Actually, Pennsylvania Ballet was kind of a compromise. So there's something very sort of touching about using this moment of kind of rebirth to go back to our roots in a way with this name.
And I know that a lot of people think, well, you know, she wanted to name it Philadelphia Ballet. She couldn't. And then she went on with Pennsylvania Ballet. And that's where she put all of her energy. And that's how Pennsylvania Ballet became a world-known company. But that doesn't mean that looking into the future, that we cannot make the company even bigger and connect even more with our community and we have the Philadelphia Orchestra, we have the Opera of Philadelphia, we have the Philadelphia Museum, Philadelphia Museum of Art. We wanted to finish our anchor with the city in a strong way. And I get the feeling that Barbara Weisberger, I'm sure, would be happy about it.
Well, as you mentioned, the name change, and inherent in that is really embracing the Philadelphia concept. What are some of the ways that you see you might be able to expand and build on the relationships you have with the community and really anchor yourself? For example, the Philadelphia Orchestra has really changed the way it interacts in the last decade. What are some ways you envision that?
First, with the name recognition, I think that would definitely put us on the map. I think that even the mayor, when we mentioned to him that we were changing our name from Pennsylvania Ballet to Philadelphia Ballet, he sent a little message saying how happy he was that one of the most important arts organizations in Philadelphia, that he was taking the name of the city and representing the city. So I think that is one of the most important parts, the fact that we're hoping in the near future to be going on tour and representing representing and taking the city and the name of Philadelphia around the world. There has been interest in China, in here in Spain, in different places around Europe to take the company. So I think that that would be also a different name. And through our community engagement programs, I think that those are really important, that Sarah Cooper, our director of our community engagement program, she's doing an incredible work in, you know, getting to different schools and different underprivileged places where people can actually connect with the ballet world, connect with Philadelphia Ballet, and connect with you know, the world of the arts. And I think it's really important, and not only with the dancing, but also with the orchestra. The orchestra, Beatrice, has done an amazing, incredible job in bringing music and bringing music and dance together to everyone in the community and in the city. So I think that that is really important. And I think that when you're representing your city and you're connecting with the people in your city, it makes a much bigger impact than not the people from the whole state, which it would be great. We would love to be able to, you know, to reach out to the whole state, and that would come later. But I think that it's important that we start from our city, from our home.
You've just come out with the announcement of what your upcoming season is going to be like, but I wanted to kind of take a look backwards and for a minute and get a sense of what you found yourself able to do in this past year, even facing the limitations that COVID brought in.
It was really frustrating because, you know, we were changing the programs constantly. I mean, one day we would say, okay, we're going to try to do this. And then the next day we'll have to rearrange and reorganize the whole season because we couldn't do it. But it was incredible because it opened a new door for us and a new way of thinking about the future and how we're going to engage with the audiences. The hardest part was that not being able to use our orchestra. I think that that was one of the most challenging parts. And I think that that was the hardest part to deal with because of, you know, COVID regulations. You know, there's a lot of instruments that they use their lungs and they're using air. And I mean, Beatrice can talk a little bit more about that. But it was really challenging with the little space that we have. And also our building is not finished yet. So to be able to separate the dancers and to have them in a safe environment and to continue doing all these programs, it was really, really challenging. But it has taught us how to engage with new audiences, to be able to do digital work, which, you know, we became now producers, and now we know how to produce ballet and to be able to sell it and to reach out to people from all over the world. And there has been more than 50 different countries that they have seen our digital season this spring. So I think that is also the plus that we're taking out of this pandemic. But yeah, there has been a lot of really, really difficult challenges that were really hard to have to talk to the dancers and to talk to the orchestra and say, you know, unfortunately, we are not going to be able to, you know, to get you into the studios or to get you into the theater. And you have to swallow and you have to, you know, put your director hat on and say, okay, and you have to listen to the dancers and to the orchestra and say, you know, this is what we need to do to survive. And it was hard. It was really, really hard.
Yeah, I will say, I mean, probably you're aware that the company had to rent a space because we don't have a large enough building yet to be able to produce within our four walls or however many walls we have. And so they rented a space, basically built a stage, created a theater, you know, where there really was none. And it was not a space that was large enough, alas, to accommodate musicians, plus the COVID regulations, etc. But I do have to say that there's some companies, some large companies that haven't even done that. So I think it's very impressive that in this unprecedentedly challenging time that the company has been as productive as it has been. Although we can't wait to get back to work in the orchestra. But
yeah, no, it was amazing because there has been big, really, really big companies with a bigger budget that we have that they could not go back. Even in January, I mean, they were January, February, March, April. They were still without doing anything, any content other than small social media clips or things that they could keep, you know, their audiences motivated. But to be able to do a whole season of 11 ballets in 5 months, that was definitely a challenge. But I have to say the dancers were incredible, you know, incredibly passionate. once we started in January, they were in perfect shape. They had been taking class in their kitchen counters and their living rooms, falling into the sofas. I mean, they were doing anything that they could to stay in shape. And I'm sure that the orchestra would have done the same thing. I think that that is something that is really wonderful to see at Philadelphia Ballet, is that everyone, it has a very passionate and driven energy. I was very lucky to dance with many companies around the world. I danced with American Ballet Theater for almost 20 years, with the Royal Ballet, with the Kirov Ballet, with the Bolshoi. And I'm not saying this because I'm the artistic director at Philadelphia Ballet, but the kind of energy that we have in the company, it's really rare to see. The 99.9.9 of the dancers and the orchestra and everyone in the company, it's willing to do anything for the company to do better. It's really unusual, really, really unusual. So I have to say thank you to all of them.
Well, and also in the recent announcement, the ballet has hired someone to do digital production and moving forward. I'm curious about the ways that having to think digitally, having to think in terms of, like you said, theater production and or the video capture of it, how did that change or alter or impact the way you approach something artistically, if at all?
Well, definitely the filming side of it, it was very challenging because there was a whole day of filming for one ballet. And I have to say, I did, for example, a commercial for Rolex. And for one commercial that it was a minute and a half or 2 minutes, we stayed for a week and a half. It was a week and a half of filming for only 2.5 minutes. We had to do a whole ballet that is 30 minutes in one day. So we had to be really prepared for when we started at 9:30 in the morning, and we usually finish at 8 o'clock or 9 in the evening. Sometimes with one of the ballets, we finish at 11:30. But every single time, the dancers, they have to be in perfection because they had to repeat it 5 different times to have 5 different angles. So when you were watching, you could actually have the different angles and feel like you're part of the show. Because when you're not watching live, you don't want to see just one dimension. You want to see the 3 dimensions. When you watch live, it's different because you're there. You can feel the music. You can see the dancers moving in space. When you're watching from television, it's not the same. So we had to do it in different angles, and it was really, really tiring for the dancers to have to repeat the same ballet over and over and over the same day. And I chose ballets that are not easy. I mean, when I told them, we're doing Clear, we're doing Allegro Brillante, we're doing Concerto Barocco, you're going to be creative with 3 different choreographers. It was not easy, like easy ballets. And I think that was one of the challenges, is that the music had to be the same all the time. And I think that that is why it would have been also more difficult, because with the orchestra, it would be harder to always have the same, unless we would have recorded, but that would have been even more challenging. So it was a learning process, the whole thing.
So looking ahead to the upcoming season, what were your goals, first of all, in pulling it together? Was there the fact that it's more of a return? How did you approach what you wanted to put on stage?
We tried to work it together with Beatrice. I tried to, talk to her about what she thinks about music and with the company manager and with the production manager, to see which ones are the ballets, and with the marketing department, which ones are the ballets that after a pandemic would be the best. We had in mind not too long ago to do one Balanchine ballet, but the music rights change. We won't say which composer it was. It was taken by a different, how would you call it?
Like a different publisher took over. So we replaced it with another ballet by Balanchine. It's just a different ballet.
Yeah.
Things like that happen.
Yeah, those are the things that they come up later on when we start to take the steps and the direction of what we're going to do. I'm trying to do 5 years in advance, but because the COVID year is sort of like, it was like in a standby year, we sort of shift some of the ballets that we were supposed to do the COVID year, and we're doing them now in the next season. Like Swan Lake, for example, that's one of the ballets that we're doing that we were supposed to do last year. So we're gonna do it this year. But we were lucky because you know, some of the choreographers that they were supposed to do something for other companies this past year, now they're not doing anything. So I could actually engage them for next year. And we have three really wonderful new choreographers that are doing three world premieres for the company. We're going back to the Nutcracker, which is going to be, you know, for us to go back to the theater, to really go back to the theater, because the first program is going to be at the Performance Garage and is going to be for a small audience. To be able to go back with the Nutcracker, I know that a lot of dancers, they're like, oh my God, Nutcracker again, and musicians too. But because it's a lot of shows all together, but I think that that is when we actually become even more of a family, because we're all together in the theater for a very long time, for a month and a half. And you're getting into the theater every day in the morning, early in the morning with your coffee. And then you see, I see Beatrice, I see, you know, the stage managers and the stage crew. I see the dancers on stage, and it sort of feels like we're all in the same place. Although you go back, you go home to sleep, but the rest of the day you spend it together. So I think that that is the best way to go back to share all of our experiences and this hard year with the audience. And then we have Swan Lake, and we have a balancing program, a whole balancing program. And then we're doing a whole celebration for a very famous choreographer from The Hague, Dutch National Ballet. His name is Hans van Manen, and we're doing three of his masterpieces. So I think that it's going to be a very interesting year, and definitely a year to remember for all of us.
I have actually promised publicly never to complain about conducting the Nutcracker again. So this
Ever
is now
again.
Even more public, because it's been many hundreds of times. But I have to say it's a gift actually to return with that, because it will have been nearly 2 years since our last orchestral performance. And this will give us the time we need to learn how to play together again. And I mean, that is one of the beautiful things about ballet compared to, you know, concerts and even opera, although opera does have this as well, is that we get to do so many performances, which allows us to really, really listen to each other in a way that's rare and unusual, and to adjust and to say, okay, next time I'm going to try this a little differently, or next. And that's, I have to say, pretty much unique to ballet. So for us, I would say Nutcracker is really an ideal way to jump back into the water.
And because we know it so well, I think people can be relaxed to think, oh, I can make a mistake because I know how to fix it if there's a mistake. So when the dancers and the orchestra go into it with that sort of like confidence, I think that that's why almost every single show of the Nutcracker, it works really, really well, because I think that people are so comfortable with it that, you know, they go into it with a very relaxed atmosphere and a very really relaxed. And it feels like, I always say that until the Nutcracker doesn't start, it doesn't really feel like the holidays. Mm-hmm. But it does feel like, you know, it has that connection with our audiences and that warmth, that people are just going there to have a great time. They're not going to judge anyone other than just, you know, share those moments with their families.
It's nice to look forward to doing something that we know will make people happy.
Mm-hmm. We need a lot of that.
Especially now, yeah.
We do, yeah.
Well, you know, obviously, yeah, reflecting these last few comments, yeah, we are very optimistic. Most of us are really hoping that we are moving forward. I mean, put so much behind us. But there are still lingering concerns, both in terms of, you know, uncertainty about new variants. Also, people and audiences are still finding their own comfort zones as far as what they're comfortable returning to. Certainly, you have time between now and October, but are there things that you're looking at in terms of either not so much restrictions, but guidelines, or things you may still be adapting to reassure people, to give a better sense or a sense of confidence, should there be lingering concerns among audience and just the general public?
Well, we will definitely follow all the CDC recommendations and at every moment, at every time. Also, we will follow anything that the theater will have in place for, you know, for to keep our audiences secure. We might implement a small, you know, cleaning and I mean, not small, but you know, that make sure that everything is it's clean and is disinfected, especially with the bathrooms. But we thought about what before the vaccine was even, you know, it was even started, the process of vaccinations. We thought about doing the Nutcracker without intermission and making it shorter. But then as time is progressing and we're seeing the how vaccination is working and the things are starting to open, we're a little bit more comfortable with doing the Nutcracker as is. With the Performance Garage, the first performance that we're doing with small audience at the Performance Garage, we will definitely have a smaller audience and much more separation. We're also going to be looking into, okay, if you're a couple, then you'll have your two seats together and then there'll be a space in between. If you're three people, maybe you'll have your three seats together and then two seats in between. So those are the things that we will be looking into. But definitely with the dancers, we were doing tests all the time, constantly. And especially if you were not vaccinated, the dancers, they have to wear masks throughout all the rehearsals the whole time, and they have to test before the filming and after the filming. So we were very rigorous, that's how you say it, that's the word, on, you know, how we did the testing and protecting everyone, and fingers crossed we didn't have any COVID outbreak during the whole rehearsal and performance. So we were very lucky. But yeah, as I said, we're looking into every day what is the recommendations. I think that if anything, we're a little bit more scared for the orchestra because they're in small space and they're, you know, on top of each other. But I think that we will try to find any solution that that we could have to try to keep it happening.
Yeah, I think we'll also there will be lessons learned from Broadway because they're going to open, you know, in September, and so we'll all be looking very attentively to, you know, for whatever wisdom we can glean from that.
Yeah, and we actually had sort of like, you know, put our toes on the pool with the Red Rose Farm performance at David Hoffman's, our chairman of the board's state. We had this small festival with three performances on Friday and two on Saturday. We had to actually move the one on Saturday because it was really hot, and we had to move it to Sunday. But we saw that people are ready to go. They're ready to go back to the theater. They're ready to enjoy and to share those moments with each other. I mean, I was actually quite scared, and I went to see a movie before I came on holidays, and the theater was packed. I mean, I was kind of scared. I actually was with my mask, and I've been vaccinated, and I was with the mask during the whole time. I wanted to eat some popcorn. I was like under the, because I mean, people are really looking forward to being back and you know, and sharing those moments again.
That was my conversation with Philadelphia Ballet Artistic Director Angel Correa and Music Director Beatrice Affron. You can hear their additional comments on the Autempo page at wwfm.org. Details on the upcoming Philadelphia Ballet season can be found at philadelphiaballet.org. I hope you enjoy these conversations that I bring you each week on Autempo that focus on the changing dynamics and challenges in the arts world. But remember that programs like this are made possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for your support of the Classical Network. Thank you for listening to Autempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. Join me again next week as we explore more issues and trends in the world of the performing arts. You can listen to past programs of Autempo by going to our arts and cultural news page at wwfm.org or searching for Autempo on our program page. Autempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you.